Welcome to a secret show, a secret Messiah Matters. This is Messiah Matters number 543, I believe. And so check this out. A couple things going on here. First of all, this is the last time we're going to see this producer credit. Sad news today. Our dear friend and executive producer, Erna Draper, went to be with the Lord. Sad for us. I think it's actually good for her. She was in a lot of pain, and I praise the Lord that she is now with her Savior. With that said, we have new producer credits that are up, and so on and so forth. So why am I... Whoa, hey, what am I doing here on a Monday? I know that's what you're asking. And the answer is... Well, actually, we'll get to the answer in just a few seconds. And this will show you how discombobulated I am, because I actually don't even have this ready to go. But... I digress. First, I'll tell you this. Things are heating up. Why are things heating up? You know, a lot of people now are listening to this show that I know were not listening to it a couple weeks ago. That's really why we're doing this show. And that's great. Hey, if you're new to this show, who am I? My name is Caleb Haig. I am I'm really a nobody, but I am the executive producer of a Messianic Jewish company called Torah Resource. Torah Resource has been around since 2002. And basically, we're out here stirring the pot right now when it comes to one law theology. Why is it that we're stirring the pot that way? Well, because I believe in one law theology, as does Torah Resource. In fact, we're going to get to some of the emails. An email that I sent one of my teachers a message and said, okay, you tell me what you think here. And he wrote back. So anyway, what is one law theology? I think that we should probably, actually, you know, I'm once again all over the place here, but check this out. I got a great email from my good friend, colleague, Michael. And this is what he said. Okay, so I think we're going to read this on Wednesday too. Why? Because I think it's really important to establish what we mean by one law theology. I oftentimes say one law theology is the belief that the Torah, the law of God, is applicable for Jew and Gentile today. Alike, there's no difference between Jew and Gentile. And I think that we see this in Ephesians 2, the one new man, the whole nine. Okay, we see this in throughout Yeshua's teachings. I even think that we see it throughout Paul's teachings, okay? But that's not really the point. This is what my good friend Michael says. He says, one law means that the Torah is for the native born. And by the way, he emailed me and said, I think that you should actually clarify what you mean by one law. So then he gives me a pretty good rundown of one law theology. So what do we mean when we're talking about one law theology anyway? This is what Michael says. He says, one law means that the Torah is for the native born and the non-native born, the Gentile, in the same way that the Torah is for male and female. There are different laws for men as there are for women. There are unique laws for the male Levites that the men of the other tribes could not keep. There are laws only for the sons of Aaron that the other Levites could not keep. Some laws excluded the widow, the orphan, the Levite, and the stranger. One law does not mean that the Gentiles can pick and choose whatever laws they want to do. One law does not mean that Gentiles can be Levites or priests or do the things that are not prescribed for Gentiles. Yeshua is not a Levite and therefore could not be a Levitical priest. He was not a son of Aaron. He would not break the Torah to fulfill each commandment. Yeshua did not keep every commandment perfectly like some teach, so we don't have to. He was not a woman or an orphan or a Levite. So what Michael means here when he says Yeshua did not keep every commandment perfectly like some teach, so we don't have to. In other words, he didn't keep the laws of Nidah. He didn't keep the laws for a woman who's menstruating. That's his point, right? So he didn't keep every single command in the Torah. He wasn't a priest, so he can't keep all of the priestly commandments. Now, maybe we could argue that he did in the heavenly realm, right? Hebrews 8, Hebrews 9, so on and so forth. But ultimately, on this earth, Yeshua didn't keep every single law. And the, you know, within Judaism, they're going to say there's 613 commandments. I would push against that. I think that's a rabbinic formula. But that doesn't matter. Let's just take that number for now. Let's pretend that there's 613 commands for ease of use. Yeshua did not come and keep 613 commands perfectly. He came and he kept the laws of Torah perfectly that apply to him. Now, with that said, the Torah itself, once again, using that number just as a placeholder, the 613 commandments are a reflection of who God is, okay? And so when we look at the Torah as a whole, all, once again, placeholder number 613, we can look at that and we can say this is who God is, right? So it encompasses God. Anyway, so continuing with, this is the very end of Michael's description here. He says, Yeshua did not keep the commandments. We talked about that. He was not a woman or orphan or a Levite, etc. He was obedient to the commandments that were relevant to himself as a first century male Judahite. Exactly. I think that that sums it up. I think that's great. Okay. So it looks like we have three people in the chat room for the secret show. Welcome in the chat room. And also, I'll say this again on Wednesday. Thank you very much to all the executive producers. Really, really appreciate you guys. As I'm getting the executive producer credits out, the gifts out. I'm always so thankful for our executive producers. Okay, so what are we doing here today? Why are we here today? I'll tell you why we're here today. We're here today because, so like I said, we got some people listening. We know for a fact that there is a messianic teacher, I don't know if he'd call himself a rabbi, who's listening to this show. And why do I say that? Because somebody has sent me some clips of his show, which seem to be, I don't see how they could not be a response to what I'm talking about. But that's great. I think that's awesome. That means that he's listening. We have another one. This is a friend of mine, also a Messianic Jewish teacher. And he wrote me. I'm not going to read like a ton of stuff that he wrote here, but he said, you believe in circumcision for Gentiles. How come? Where do you see this in the New Testament? Okay. First of all, circumcision is a topic that we have just spent so much time on. That's why I'm doing this show on a Monday as a separate secret show. I think I did an entire series on circumcision. However, this person is in the Messianic Jewish movement and is a teacher in the Messianic Jewish movement, and therefore, it shows me that new people are listening to the show, right, that weren't listening before. And so, these are the kind of things that you got to go over and over and over again. But beyond that, I think that there's actually some new perspective that I'll give you on this, if possible. Okay, I've also been in contact with some of my friends who take a different view than I take on circumcision. Okay, so let's talk about this real quick. So within the Messianic movement, Messianic Judaism, whatever you want to say. And I would probably say within the Hebrew Roots movement. However, I don't know any Hebrew Roots people who are having this discussion. I only know Messianic people in the Messianic realm who are having this discussion. So within the one law Messianic Jewish realm, there's two major beliefs on circumcision. What are those beliefs? The first belief I'll give you my belief, okay? The first belief is my belief, which is that Ephesians 2 talks about one new man, right? There's Jew and Gentile. All of a sudden, Yeshua comes, and he breaks down this wall that is between us, and he makes one new man. And therefore, as I said last week, I don't think that distinctions of Jew and Gentile are super important. Are they there? Yeah, they might be there, but I don't think it matters. We find our identity not in our bloodline. We find our identity in Yeshua, right? We find our identity in the Mashiach. No longer should we care if a person is bloodline Jewish or not. Now, is there a benefit to being a Jew? Yes, much in every way, right? Why? Because the Jews, we have maintained the oracles and the covenants of God. That is a blessing. That's a great thing. That's not to be diminished. But at the same time, once again, it is not where we find our identity. I think that Paul, when he talks to the Corinthians, he equates them with the ecclesia of God. He equates them with the assembly of God. I think it's actually, this is a different conversation, but I think it's actually location specific. But nonetheless, So I believe that all the laws that would apply to any covenant member, whether Jew or Gentile, apply to, of course, Gentiles. So I think that the distinction is covenant member. If you are a covenant member, the laws apply to you. If you are not a covenant member, well, you're in sin and you're going against the covenant, right? You don't know Yeshua. That's a different category altogether. But covenant members, okay? We're going to look at some of this in the text in just a few seconds. So when we get to the apostolic scriptures, the big rub for the, so when we get to the, for me, when we get to the apostolic scriptures, when we see things about circumcision, this particularly is in Paul, right? We only see this in Paul. Paul is the one who comes and says, and it seems like he's speaking against circumcision, right? And so I think that many people see that and they say, aha, see, Paul is against circumcision. Now, the mainstream Christian church has taken that, taken the places in Paul where he talks about circumcision. And they said, aha, circumcision is no more. We don't have to do circumcision. This doesn't work for one law adherence. Why? Because, obviously, if a law is said to be forever throughout all your generations, then somebody should probably still be keeping it, right? Okay, with that said, what's the other view within the mainstream, well, I wouldn't say mainstream, within the Messianic Jewish one law view? This has been pushed by Dr. McKenzie. It's been pushed by Ben Frostad, great friend of mine, by the way. This is not a dig on any of these people. In fact, Benjamin Frostad just presented a paper at the Society of Biblical Literature on this very subject, right? And so it is actually entering its way into what I would say the scholarly realm. And Ben was gracious enough to send me a copy of his paper. It's well written. I disagree with it. I don't think that it's right, but at the same time, it's well written. And he is, I think that Ben is really doing a lot of work to push this perspective, which I actually think is not necessarily a bad thing, because I think we need to have these perspectives out in the open forum so that we can discuss back and forth, right? And Ben and I have talked about this issue, personally, I think that he knows my position, and I think that it's good to have these kind of conversations on a more public level so that there can be interaction with them. So once again, I say all of that just because this is not a dig on any one of my friends. I love these people very much, but we do disagree on this. So what's the perspective that they're taking? Well, the perspective that is being taken, and I really don't want to misrepresent here, so I'll do my best, okay? I will do my best. The perspective is that within the Tanakh, circumcision is not given to Gentiles. To gers. So a ger means like a stranger. A ger toshav is like a covenant. I believe it would, that category is like a stranger who has become a covenant member. Okay, a ger toshav. And so the argument that the way I understand the argument to go is that God gives circumcision to Abraham. He says it has to be on the eighth day. Okay? And basically, outside of the eighth day, there's no command, this is their view, there's no command for a ger or a ger toshav to become circumcised. In other words, if it's not on the eighth day, you don't have to do it. You might want to do it, right? Because in Exodus 12, it's going to say that if the ger toshav wants to eat the Passover, they have to become circumcised. So the argument goes, the way that I understand the argument, it goes that, okay, yeah, there is no command for a Gentile to become circumcised. If they want to, they can. But ultimately, it's more about, circumcision doesn't make you right before God. I would agree with that. I would agree that circumcision doesn't make you right before God. Okay, so these are the two main views. Now, within the very broad Messianic Jewish perspective, you know, Dr. Rudolph and I have been having these conversations as well. Dr. Rudolph believes that circumcision is an identity marker for Jews only, and that Gentiles should not become circumcised, right? So that the Gentiles, basically, you can be a covenant member, but you don't get circumcised, right? That is only for Jews. That's a Jewish identity marker. So we're going to look at all of this in just a second. So the question really of that my friend has asked about where do we find this in the apostolic scriptures. I would say that we find the commands for Gentiles to be circumcised anywhere where we would go for a one law passage as well. For instance, Yeshua says, the Matthew 5:17 passage, until heaven and earth passes away, not the smallest letter or stroke will pass away from the law. So to me, since I believe that Gentiles should be circumcised physically, then that would be a passage I'd go to. Romans 3:31, does faith therefore nullify the law? May it never be. Right, and on and on and on. So all of the one law passages that we would go to, any one law person would go to show that they believe that the Torah is still in act today for Jew and Gentile alike, that's where I would go to say, see, look, this is why Gentiles should be circumcised physically. Now, there needs to be some caveats here. How am I reconciling Paul and all these passages of Paul, which seem to speak against circumcision? The answer to that is, my father has done a lot of work on this, especially in his Galatians commentary. And one of my teachers, my mentor, I'll read his email here in just a few seconds. I asked him this question as well. And he said, I take your father's view, right? Your dad has done some great work on the idea that the term circumcision is being used by Paul as a shorthand for conversion. And so Paul wasn't against the physical act of circumcision. We see this with Timothy, right? Paul circumcises Timothy. If he was so against Gentiles being circumcised, then why does he, Timothy is obviously the one that we would go to. But then if that's the case, why is he seemingly speaking against circumcision? And, Rob Van Hoff has done some great work on this as well, but he's pointed out, in Galatians, Paul says, I'm not doing this to gain the favor of men, right? If I was doing this to gain the favor of men, then, my message would be nothing, right? So you're telling me that he says, I'm not doing this to gain the favor of men, but then he goes and circumcises Timothy? What, because he's afraid of men or because the Jews say that he should? That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense at all. So something else has to be going on with Paul. And what my father has argued at length, I agree with him. He has argued that the term circumcision was a shorthand for man-made ritual conversion. And what this means is that the Jews said, it doesn't matter if you believe. It doesn't matter if you're following God and keeping the commandments. Until you go through our ritual of conversion, you're not a covenant member. And Paul says, absolutely not. Faith is what saves you. And he argues this in Romans 14. Right? Abraham believed God, it was reckoned to him as righteousness, and then he becomes circumcised. Okay, so we see this throughout Romans, we see this throughout Galatians, and if we just understand this term circumcision as man-made ritual, like conversion, right, a man-made ritual of conversion, becoming a proselyte, let's use that as the shorthand. Now hear a verse like this: becoming a proselyte is nothing, not becoming a proselyte is nothing, what matters is keeping the commandments. Okay. So that's how I would understand passages like that. So, okay, now, really what we have to do then is we have to go back to what circumcision is. And this is really the debate that I've been having with, the inner circle debates that I've been having with my brothers in the Lord who are taking a different position. We could go to... Let's see here. I think I'm going to have to switch over to a different view. This view. Okay. Give me just one second here. I'm going to try to get my face, my ugly mug up here as well. I know I'm doing this on the fly, people. So just, bear with me here. Let me, I'm going to crop myself. See, this is what you get to see. The behind the scenes of what goes on in this show. Okay, and now I'm going to do a little magic here. All right, so Genesis 17. Okay, let me kick over. Oh, see, my keyboard turned off as well. Okay, so Genesis 17. Let's just read this whole thing. When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said to him, I am God Almighty, I am El Shaddai. This is interesting. El Shaddai is, my father's argued, and I think he's right, that El Shaddai usually, almost all the time, shows up when a child is going to be involved, right? Walk before me and be blameless. That I may make my covenant between me and you and may multiply you greatly. Then Abram fell on his face, and God said to him, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. This is actually important, because the argument is that circumcision is bloodline specific. It's only for Abraham. But right here, he's already talking about the goyim, right? The Gentiles. You're going to be a father of Hamon Goyim, a multitude of nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I have made you the father of a multitude of nations. Once again, Hamon Goyim, right? A multitude of nations. So from the outset, I think that what is being, this is actually really important. God is telling him that there is Gentiles in view here. It's not just his offspring. It's his offspring is not just his lineage. His offspring is a multitude of nations. This is really important for our conversation, because what the mainstream Messianic Jewish view is, and even what this one law view is, the one that opposes my view, is that circumcision is only for Gentile, or only for descendants of Abraham. But the entire passage begins by saying your offspring is not just your lineage. Your offspring is nations. So now he's going to give him a command that is throughout all your generations. But he just said that his lineage is not just his physical lineage. It's a multitude of nations. That's important. Okay. I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make you into nations, and kings shall come from you, and I will establish my covenant between me and you and your offspring after you throughout their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and to your offspring after you. I will give to you and to your offspring after you the land of your sojournings, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your offspring after you throughout your generations. Okay, this is actually important. Once again, people are going to say, okay, this is bloodline specific. I'm going to say, no, this is not bloodline specific. This is covenant specific. Circumcision is given to covenant members. That does not matter what your bloodline is. This is my covenant, which I will keep between me and you and your offspring after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskins, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. It shall be a sign of the covenant. So if you're a covenant member, see, once again, I think that this means if you're a covenant member, it doesn't matter what your bloodline is. Keep in mind, first, this is, okay, let's make a couple of points here. Number one, Abraham is not a Jew. Abraham is a Gentile. He is a ger. Okay? His entire household at this point are gers. They're all goys. They're all Gentiles. There is not a Jew on earth at this point. Jews are descendants of Jacob. So God is commanding a Gentile to circumcise himself. He's commanding a Gentile to circumcise all of his household and his descendants. It's not just his descendants. Is his entire household as well. That's really important, because if it's bloodline specific, then Abraham shouldn't be circumcised. And the idea that it's only on the eighth day, we're going to get to that. Let's kick back here. Okay. He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised. Okay, so this is like the main point of the argument, the other one law argument, right? It has to be on the eighth day. Otherwise, there's no command for you to get circumcised. But I think that that's also not true. Every male throughout your generations, whether born in your house or bought with your money from any foreigner who is not of your offspring. Okay, let's break this down for a second. every male throughout your generations, whether born in your house or bought with money from any foreigner who is not of your offspring. So a Gentile, right, a Gentile. So any Gentile who's bought for money, and is that on the eighth day? No, it's not. Any foreigner who is bought with money needs to be circumcised. So right here we have someone who is a Gentile, not circumcised on the eighth day, but needs to be circumcised. So this is a command for a Gentile to be circumcised, not on the eighth day. Now, the argument, and I've been on the phone with people this morning, the argument goes, oh, well, this is a different category than the Geratoshav, than a Gentile who becomes a covenant member. And my point is, you're telling me that a slave who was bought with money is told to be circumcised, not on the eighth day. It's a commanded, but a covenant member who's supposed to, I mean, their covenant member is not supposed to be circumcised. Now, okay, yeah, we'll get to another important point here in just a second. Both he who is born in your house and he who is bought with your money shall surely be circumcised. So shall my covenant be in your flesh, an everlasting covenant. So the covenant is supposed to be in our flesh. Any uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin shall be cut off from his people. Once again, this is not, so verse 14, any uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, it doesn't say on the eighth day, it just says any uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant. Okay, let's go one more place. Let's go here to Genesis 23:4. So the argument, remember, is that a Geratoshav is never commanded to circumcise himself or to be circumcised unless it's on the eighth day. But the one of my points here is that Abraham calls himself a Geratoshav. Genesis 23:4. I am, so the way that the Hebrew works is Ger Vetoshav Anochi. I am a sojourner and a foreigner among you. I am a ger and a toshav among you. Who's he talking to? He's talking to the Hittites. So Abraham considers himself a ger toshav. So in other words, God has given the command to circumcise himself. Remember that Abraham is not 8 days old when he gets circumcised. Abraham and his household are ger toshav. They are ger toshav, and they're commanded by God to be circumcised. Another instance where, you know, someone who's not circumcised on the eighth day, Moses' sons. The second generation that was wandering in the wilderness comes in, also a mixed multitude, by the way, comes into Israel. Joshua circumcises them, not circumcised on the eighth day. So these are, I mean, this is my argument, is that no, circumcision is not bloodline specific. It's covenant specific. If you're a covenant member, circumcision is for you. However, it needs to be very, very specifically stated. Paul is against the notion that circumcision gets you into the covenant. If you think that circumcision is going to get you covenant status, you shouldn't be circumcised. Titus was not compelled to be circumcised. In other words, he did not believe that he had to be circumcised to become a covenant member. He was already a covenant member by faith. Now, I want to go to an email. This was the email. Let's see here. Where am I? Okay. This to one of my teachers, Ariel Berkowitz. Ariel Berkowitz lives in Israel now. He made Aliyah. He's Jewish by blood, so much so that they gave him Aliyah in Israel. Okay. And this was my question to him. By the way, go find some of Ariel's classes in the TR Learning Center. You can sign up for them. They're evergreen. They're excellent. He did two on Isaiah, two on church history. He did one on geography of biblical lands. Excellent. Really good. Okay. Ariel, this is what I said to Ariel. I said, Ariel, do you believe Gentiles should be physically circumcised? Pretty straightforward question, right? Because I wanted to know. I thought maybe I missed it. Maybe I missed, you know, maybe I'm like the only one. Maybe my dad and I are the only ones who believe this. No, 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 no. And I know for a fact that, and you know, Rob and I have, Rob Van Hoff has taught this for years and years and years as well. Okay. And this is what he says. He says, you have raised a very difficult question. From my perspective, I do not think anyone should or must do anything. To me, that terminology opens the door wide to legalism. What are the consequences if one does not blank? I prefer to say that the new creation self will want to be circumcised or do XYZ, right? Do blank. It is part of who we are, that we are people who have Yeshua in us, and our responsibility is to yield our members to him. Given that perspective, it seems to me that since Yeshua is in us and he is the living Torah, then the new creation will want to be circumcised. I believe Tim's, that's my father, I believe Tim's interpretation of Galatians 5, that Paul referred to circumcision as a byword for conversion to Judaism. With that passage out of the way, I do not see why any Gentile would not want to be circumcised, especially since Paul also says that a Gentile is no longer a foreigner or a stranger, but a fellow citizen with the saints. The continual stream of the remnant of believers from Israel. This is how I would talk of the matter with those who are against Gentiles being circumcised. This is great. I mean, this is, you know, my teacher's great, great wisdom and insight here. So I think he's absolutely right. If we're going to talk about circumcision, the idea of must a Gentile be circumcised? I would say, to do what? No, a Gentile does not have to be circumcised to be a covenant member, but neither does a Jew. In other words, let's say that you have a Jewish person who is raised maybe in a secular Jewish home, Jewish by blood, but raised maybe even the Christian church. Parents didn't circumcise him, right? And he comes to faith in Yeshua. Should that person be circumcised? And my answer would be that person is already a covenant member. So the idea of should maybe is not the right word, as my teacher has said. Rather, once we accept the covenant, we will want to do what God has commanded. And therefore, circumcision is an option. Physical circumcision is an option for both Jew and Gentile alike. Will it save them? Will it get them into the covenant? No, faith does that, obviously. But we will want to be to do what God has commanded. We will want to do what God wants us to do. And therefore, I believe that Gentiles should be circumcised if they want to continue to do what they believe God has told them to do, then circumcision is part of that. Once again, it is not something that's going to get you into the covenant. But that's once again, take bloodline out of this. That's true for Jew or Gentile alike. So my question to those who think that Jews should be circumcised but Gentiles shouldn't, what does that do for them? If they've already come to faith in Yeshua, what does that do for them? Whatever your answer is, apply that to Gentiles, because I don't think that the Torah is bloodline specific. If you are a covenant member, then you have the birthright of the Torah. That's what one law, in my mind, that's what one law theology is. Now, of course, I don't want to downplay the fact that I have a lot of friends who are clearly one law, clearly messianic, clearly one law messianics, and they don't believe that Gentiles should be, or anyone. I think that their argument would be that no one should be circumcised or needs to be circumcised unless they're going to celebrate the Passover, which I disagree with. But those are the arguments. So that would be my answer to the person who text messaged me. My answer would be, any place in the Apostolic Scriptures where we see the notion that the Torah should be kept, the Torah is not bloodline specific. The Torah is covenant member specific. And you know, when I responded to this person, I said, "So you think that that covenant members shouldn't be circumcised? Think about it logically for a second. So when you're saying that If you say that Gentiles don't need to be circumcised or shouldn't be circumcised, don't need to be is probably the wrong terminology, right? So if you're saying that Gentiles shouldn't be circumcised, but Jews should, so you're saying that some covenant members shouldn't be circumcised. To me, it's covenant member specific. It really has nothing to do with bloodline. And once again, I think we always need to remember, Abraham was not a Jew. He was a Gentile. And he was a Ger Toshav. And God tells him to become circumcised. Okay, that's going to do it. That's going to do it for me today. Short show here, but I hope that answers some questions. Going to be back in 2 days, Wednesday. Come back, and we'll keep going with Rudolph's paper. I got some other papers we're going to go through too at some point. Yeah, well, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun times. All right. I hope that this conversation, as always, has done one thing. And that is at least one thing. That is to glorify our great God and Savior, Yeshua the Messiah. Why? You know why. Because Messiah matters.